Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
Imagine something watching you. I don't mean a security camera in a parking lot or a nosy neighbor peeking through the blinds.
Right.
I mean a presence. Something that feels, I don't know, ancient, malevolent, and just totally inescapable.
It's a deeply unsettling thought.
It really is. Imagine it sees the text messages you send to your spouse. It knows the secret fears you only whisper to yourself. And worst of all, it's whispering those secrets right into the ears of your enemies.
For anyone who grew up reading fantasy novels or watching blockbusters, that immediately conjures up one specific image.
The Eye of Sauron.
Exactly. The Eye of Sauron from The Lord of the Rings.
The ultimate villain. The Great Eye. But today, we aren't talking about Mordor. We aren't talking about hobbits. We are talking about a very real, very modern threat.
Yes, we are.
We are diving deep into a group calling themselves the Eye of Sauron, or Sarnafe. And I want to be clear right off the bat. This isn't just about some hackers trying to steal your credit card number.
Far from it.
This is about a group using that villainous branding as a psychological weapon in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, specifically looking at the escalations we've seen in late 2025 and early 2026.
It is a fascinating, if disturbing, case study. It really blurs the line between code and cognition.
It does. But before we unlock the psychology here, I need to make a very specific introduction. This deep dive is presented by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, which is a division of the Orange Cyber Defense Epidemiology Laboratory.
And that distinction is actually crucial for you, the listener, to understand. Because the Bureau doesn't just look at lines of code.
Right, they aren't just checking firewalls.
Exactly. Their approach combines OSINT, open source intelligence, with HUMINT, or human intelligence evidence. They investigate cyber activities through a specific multidimensional lens.
Which involves what, exactly?
Emotional intelligence, cognitive, and geopolitical analysis of the influences of cyber threats.
Wow. Okay, that sounds intense. It sounds like they are profiling a serial killer rather than, you know, debugging software.
In a way, they are profiling a mindset.
So we aren't just looking at how they hacked a server, but why they hacked it in a specific way to mess with people's heads.
That is the core of it. To understand the Eye of Sauron, we have to analyze how they weaponize emotional and cognitive intelligence. And to do that properly, the Bureau relies on some foundational frameworks.
Okay.
We aren't just guessing here. We're looking at the work of Mayer and Solovey from 1997 regarding the perception and facilitation of emotion.
Mayer and Solovey, got it.
We're also looking at Daniel Goleman's 1995 work on applying emotional intelligence to influence and Reuven Baron's 1997 social-emotional intelligence models.
Whoa, hold on. We're bringing 1990s psychology textbooks to a cyber warfare fight. It seems a bit abstract.
It does sound abstract at first.
Why does a hacker need to know about the facilitation of emotion?
Because the target isn't the computer. The target is the human operating the computer. If you can hack the human's fear response, you don't need to crack their password. They might just give it to you. Or better yet, they might be too terrified to even turn the computer on.
That makes a terrifying amount of sense.
That's why we need Mayer, Solovey, and Goleman. We need the manual on how human feelings work to understand how this group is breaking them.
Okay, we're reverse engineering the ghost in the machine. So let's unpack this. First things first, the name, Eye of Sauron. It's traumatic, it's pop culture, it's a little bit theatrical.
Very theatrical.
Why pick a villain from a book? Why not Cyber Strike Force or something generic?
The theatricality is the point. It's highly calculated.
Huh.
If we look at George Lakoff's work on conceptual metaphors, the choice of the eye is about establishing a metaphor of omniscient surveillance.
Omniscient surveillance, meaning I see everything.
I see everything and you are nowhere. It sends a message to the enemy, in this case, primarily the Ukrainian military, that there are no shadows, no secret.
Like sphere branding, like a pirate raising the Jolly Roger.
It is, but it operates on a deeper level than a pirate flag. A pirate flag says, we are going to attack you. The eye says, we already know what you are going to do.
That is deeply creepy.
But we need to make a very important distinction here, because there is often confusion in the intelligence community. There was an older state-sponsored spy group, an Advanced Persistent Threat, or APT, that was also nicknamed Strider, or Eye of Sauron.
Right, I saw that in the notes. They were active way back, like 2011 to 2016.
Correct. That group used the REMSEC malware. They were what we call silent spies. Their job was to get in, steal data, and never be seen. If you knew they were there, they had failed.
Okay, so they were the ninjas in the dark.
The group we are discussing today, active in the 2025 to 2026 window, is fundamentally different. They are hacktivists.
So they are loud.
Very noisy, they are public, and their primary goal isn't just stealing data, it's influence. They want you to know they are there. They want to be the monster under the bed that screams at you.
So the old group wanted to stay hidden, but this new group wants everyone to look at them.
They crave the attention. They emerged specifically during the mid-2025 escalations of the Russia-Ukraine war. Their stance is explicitly pro-Russian, anti-NATO, and anti-Ukrainian.
They aren't trying to hide that bias at all.
Not even a little. They are amplifying it.
Okay, so we know who they are, or at least who they say they are. Let's get into the how. You mentioned this is about psychological warfare. There is a specific case study that really highlights this for me.
The Sonata Messenger breach.
Yes, the breach of the Sonata Messenger. This is the critical incident, right?
It is. We're looking at claimed breaches in November 2025 and again in February 2026. Sonata Messenger is a chat service used by the Ukrainian military.
Now, usually when a hacker breaks into a military chat, they quietly download the intel and sell it or use it for airstrikes. But these guys, they didn't do that.
No, they took a very different approach.
They posted a message to the users. And I have to say, the specific phrasing they used gave me chills. They said, "Meat does not report to commanders."
It's brutal, isn't it?
It's visceral. "Meat does not report to commanders." That isn't just, "We hacked you." That is calling a human being cattle. It's saying you are just dead flesh walking.
That phrase is a perfect example of what we call a fear appeal. And this is where we need to bring in Kim Witt.
Kim Witt. Remind me of her work.
She developed the Extended Parallel Process Model, or EPPM, back in the early 90s. It's a framework for understanding how people react to fear. Witt argues that for a fear appeal to work effectively, it needs two components.
Which are?
A severe threat and a sense of efficacy.
Efficacy meaning the ability to do something about it.
Exactly. Think about a fire alarm. The alarm is the severe threat. It tells you you're in danger. But the efficacy is the glowing green exit sign.
It tells you how to survive.
Right. If you have the threat and the exit sign, you act rationally. You leave the building.
But if you have the alarm and no exit,
you panic.
Yeah.
You freeze. Or you go into denial.
Yeah.
Witt's model says that without a clear path to safety, fear doesn't make you fight harder. It makes you give up.
So let's apply that to the meat message. The threat is, we are reading your texts. We know where you are.
And the lack of efficacy is the implication that there's nothing you can do about it. The eye sees all. You can't hide.
Yeah.
By calling the meat, they are stripping away their agency. They are saying, you aren't soldiers who can fight back. You are just livestock.
God, that's dark. So the goal isn't even to get the intel. The goal is to make the soldier look at his phone and think, if I type anything, I die. There is no exit.
It paralyzes military decision-making. Mm. It erodes trust. If soldiers think the enemy is reading their texts, they stop communicating. And an army that doesn't communicate is an army that loses.
That's the fear angle. But you also mentioned cognitive biases. This is where it gets really interesting for me because we all think we're smart, rational people, right? We think we analyze facts objectively.
We like to tell ourselves that.
Yeah.
But Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky spent their careers proving us wrong.
Oh, Kahneman. Thinking fast and slow.
Yes. Their 2011 work and their 1979 work on prospect theory is essential here. The Eye of Sauron exploits a specific glitch in our brains called the availability heuristic.
Okay, I've heard of this. This is the reason people are afraid of flying but not afraid of driving, right?
That's a classic example. You see a plane crash on the news. It's horrific. There's fire. It's visual. It's memorable.
So your brain thinks plane crashes are super common.
Meanwhile, thousands of people die in car accidents. But it's not on the news, so you don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You judge the likelihood of an event by how easily you can picture it.
So how does the Eye of Sauron use that?
They make their hacks incredibly vivid. They don't just steal data. They post dramatic screenshots on Telegram. They use scary red graphics. They use that meat language.
So even if the hack was actually small, maybe they only got into one low-level account, they make it look like they own the whole system.
And because the image is so scary and so available to your mind, you assume the threat is massive. The availability heuristic makes the breach feel total, even if technically it was minor.
Wow. They hack a little bit of code, but they hack a lot of our perception.
And for their own audience, the pro-Russian supporters, they rely on confirmation bias. These dramatic claims filter out any Russian failures and reinforce the narrative that Russia is winning or that Russian cyber capabilities are invincible.
It keeps their side motivated.
Exactly.
It's a feedback loop. They scare the enemy and pump up their own fans at the same time. And speaking of fans, let's talk about how this spreads, because this isn't just happening on dark web forums where only the hardcore tech people hang out.
No, not at all.
This is on Telegram. This is on X.
The medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said. But in this case, the medium is the contagion vector. This group operates heavily on social networks. And this brings us to the concept of emotional contagion.
Emotional contagion, it sounds like a biological virus.
It acts remarkably like one. Christakis and Fowler did groundbreaking work on this in 2009. They show that emotions can spread through social networks, friend to friend to friend, just like a flu.
If your friends are happy, you get happy.
If they are angry, you get angry.
And I'm guessing digital networks make that spread even faster?
Much faster. Later studies by Kramer, Guillory, and Hancock in 2014 confirmed that this occurs digitally and can be heavily manipulated. The ISRON isn't just posting updates. They are injecting a virus of emotion.
So they use bots to sneeze on everyone?
Effectively, yes. They use bots, specifically the Eye of Sauron bot, to inject high arousal emotions into the network. Anger, fear, urgency.
Because those are the ones that get shared.
Exactly. These are the emotions that travel fastest. You don't retweet something that makes you feel mildly content.
Yeah.
You retweet something that makes you furious or terrified.
And who are they targeting with this? Just random people scrolling through X.
It's quite targeted, actually.
Yeah.
They look for specific niches where these emotions will resonate. They target Z bloggers, the pro-war Russian bloggers, who are already primed for nationalism.
Makes sense.
But, and this is strange, they also look for fringe groups internationally. We've seen evidence of them targeting U.S. racist groups or Spanish anti-fascists.
Wait, those are opposite ends of the spectrum. You have the far right in the U.S. and anti-fascists in Spain. Why target both? Do they care about the politics?
They don't care about the ideology at all. They care about the arousal level. Both of those groups are what we call high arousal communities.
They are already angry.
They are already angry. They are already looking for a fight. The Eye of Sauron just drops a match into that gasoline.
So they are weaponizing mood swings. It's radicalization as a service.
It leads to what Graphica, the social network analysis firm, calls perception hacking in their 2025 report.
Perception hacking.
The idea is to create an illusion of power. Even if the technical attack is small, say a simple DDoS attack that knocks a website offline for an hour, the announcement of the attack is staged as a major catastrophic victory.
It's like a magic trick. You wave the cape over here so nobody notices you didn't actually saw the lady in half.
Daniel Boorstin called these pseudo-events. Events created solely to be reported on. The Eye of Sauron is a master of the pseudo-event. They inflate their public profile to look like a giant.
And people buy it.
And this provides what Golek Dzhavala in 2011 calls narcissistic validation for their followers.
Narcissistic validation, that's a great term. What does it mean in this context?
It means it makes the followers feel special. It makes them feel like they're part of a powerful, punishing in-group. It feels good to be on the side of the all-seeing eye rather than the one being watched. It feeds the collective ego.
That leads perfectly into the social structure of this, because looking at the timeline, September 2025 was a big month for them. They stopped being a solo act.
They did. They announced an alliance with other groups, specifically Intide and Overflame. This was amplified heavily by Russian media outlets like MASH.
Now, help me understand the hacker mindset here. Usually, hackers are ego-driven, right? They want the credit. Why share the glory with other groups?
You would think that, but remember, the goal here is psychological dominance, not just technical bragging rights. We have to look at social identity theory, proposed by Henri Toshvel way back in 1979.
Toshvel, okay, break him down for me.
Toshvel argued that humans have a desperate innate need to categorize themselves into in-groups and out-groups, us versus them.
Right.
By forming these alliances, the Eye of Sauron reinforces the identity of the patriotic defenders, that's the in-group, versus the dehumanized Nazis or NATO forces, the out-group.
So the alliance makes the U.S. feel bigger and stronger.
Stronger and more legitimate. The Sauron branding might seem villainous to us, but for them, it unites them under a banner of absolute power. It actually helps reduce cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance, you mean the guilt of being a criminal.
Exactly. Hacking is illegal. Sabotaging infrastructure is a crime. Destroying a hospital's network is objectively bad.
Yeah.
But if you frame it as, we are the Eye, the Defenders, the Alliance Against the Evil West, you aren't a criminal anymore. You're a soldier. You're a hero.
That's a powerful mental gymnastic. I'm not stealing data, I'm defending the motherland. So, we have a group that's masterful at branding, understands the psychology of fear thanks to WIT, exploits our cognitive biases thanks to Kahneman, and knows how to use social identity theory to build an army.
It's a potent combination.
The big question is, where is this going?
The Cyber Intelligence Bureau has developed two hypotheses regarding the future of the Eye of Sauron. And frankly, neither of them is particularly comforting.
Well, rip the Band-Aid off. Let's start with the most likely scenario. What do we think is going to happen if things stay on the current trajectory?
Scenario A is what we call the continuation of psychological attrition. We believe they will stick to what is working, DDoS attacks, and perception hacking.
Low cost, high visibility.
Precisely. They will continue using Telegram and X to spread these fear appeals and emotional contagion. The target remains the same: Ukrainian military morale and, increasingly, NATO public opinion.
So they want to make the war feel endless.
They want the West to look at the conflict and think Russia is inevitable. Resistance is futile.
It's a war of exhaustion, wearing us down mentally until we just want it to stop.
That is the attrition strategy. But there is a second scenario, scenario B. This is the most dangerous hypothesis.
I really don't like the sound of that. Most dangerous implies things getting broken.
It implies the digital bleeding into the physical. Scenario B involves an evolution from noisy hacktivists to a kinetic, physical, hybrid warfare force. The fear is that they evolve from using simple tools to using APT-grade tools, advanced persistent threat tools.
You mean like the old Strider group, the silent spies?
Yes, but using those tools loudly. Imagine if they coordinate with allies like Intaid to attack critical infrastructure. We aren't talking about a chat app anymore. We're talking about power grids. We are talking about transportation networks. We are talking about military command and control systems.
So imagine the lights go out in Kyiv or Warsaw at the exact same moment. The bots are screaming that the invasion is here.
That is the nightmare scenario. Imagine the fear campaigns we just discussed. The meat messages, the panic, the rumors. Now imagine that happening at the exact same moment. The power grid fails. Or the train system shuts down.
It would be chaos. Total panic.
Total cognitive overload. That is the kinetic evolution. And the risk is that this spills over borders. If they cause widespread technical breakdowns and economic chaos, that could easily impact NATO countries like Poland. It moves from psychological pressure to physical societal unrest.
It really highlights why we're talking about this deep dive today. Because for a long time, I think people thought of cyber war as something that happens inside computers. Like, oh, the website is down. That's annoying.
It is a dangerous misconception. The Eye of Sauron proves that the modern battlefield is cognitive. They are hacking brains.
They really are.
They are using WIT's fear appeals to freeze you. They're using Kahneman's availability heuristic to trick you. They're using Tajfel's identity theories to recruit against you. They are trying to win a war without firing a shot, just by breaking the enemy's will to fight.
It's fascinating and a little terrifying how much of this comes down to basic human psychology. We like to think we're advanced, rational beings living in the 21st century, but you trigger the right fear response or show us a scary enough image, and we revert to those basic instincts.
That is the vulnerability they are exploiting. Our hardware, our brains hasn't been patched in 50,000 years. We still react to threats the same way. And understanding that mechanism is the first step in defending against it.
So for everyone listening to this deep dive, in an age of perception hacking, the most critical firewall isn't on your computer, it is in your mind.
Very true.
When you see a terrifying headline or a viral post that makes your blood boil or your stomach drop, you have to pause. You have to ask yourself, am I seeing the truth or am I just staring back into the eye?
A vital question for the years ahead. Skepticism is the new antivirus.
Absolutely. Thanks for exploring this deep dive with us. It's been heavy but completely necessary to understand. To our listeners, stay curious, stay skeptical, and don't let the bots tell you how to feel. We'll catch you on the next one.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.